This is a Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Mary Melman is back with us to discuss filing your 2019 tax returns. Mary's business is Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in the tax business for more than 30 years, serving individuals, consulting to tax professionals, and teaching tax seminars around the country. Now, more than likely, you're staying home more these days, so if you haven't filed yet, this might be the perfect time to do it, and Mary can answer your tax questions. Join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Jill.
Thanks for waiting around for us to get to the show. It's going to be a short half hour today, but I'm sure you'll have lots of good information for us. Before we go there, let's talk about one thing that might be on a lot of people's mind. Have you heard anything about the COVID-19 causing the filing date to be moved?
The only thing that I've heard so far are rumors.
Okay.
Just checked the IRS website a minute ago, and so far nothing has come out to change the deadline. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen in the future and things like that, but at this point, it's business as usual.
Okay. So,
they say two things are sure in life, death and taxes.
That is very true.
We need to file taxes.
Yep, we need to do it. And like I had mentioned, we've got time. Probably a lot of people right now are home that they have time to put it together. Well, let's go to Tom in Buffalo County. He's been waiting and has a question for you. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Great. Thank you.
You bet.
I'm sorry, I don't have a question for 2019 return.
Okay.
I have to file amended returns for my Schedule H. And two questions. How many years can I go back? I know it says four. I'm not exactly sure which years are included. And do I have to file the Form 1 with the H schedule or just the Schedule H and attachments?
Okay. The Schedule H that you are talking about is the homestead credit.
That's correct.
And the homestead credit is available for amending. So, like Wisconsin has four open years for auditing, you also have 4 years to file the Schedule H. So they can audit you for 4 years, one more year than the federal, and for all of those years you can go back. So before April 15th, you would be able to do 18, 17, 16, and 15.
Ah, 15 was the one I wasn't sure of.
As long as you get it in before April 15th.
Right.
After that, it would be too late for that.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for that.
And your other question,
go ahead, Mary.
Excuse me. Your other question was, do you have to file a Form 1? And the answer is no. The homestead credit is a standalone form that can be filed by itself. If you're not filing a Form 1, you don't have to attach it to it. Obviously, if you have filed a Form 1 in the past, you need to pull the numbers off of that, and if you're starting with that number, you should be attaching a copy of it.
Okay, great. And that's Mary, thank you for that attention to detail. That's why you do taxes and I don't. Now, we wanted to talk a little bit about charitable deductions in general and also some about IRAs. So let's just go over what the rules are about charitable deductions, because that did change last year, right?
A little bit of it changed.
Okay.
First of all, charitable deductions are still alive and well as far as the ability to deduct them. Some people have gotten the misinformation that you can't get benefit from charitable deductions because of the change of the standard deduction. The little catch is that with the standard deduction being so high, not everybody is able to itemize, and that kind of puts a cloud over it. If you are able to itemize, charitable deductions are deductible in much the same way as they used to be. The only change last in the bill in 2017 allowed people to donate up to 60% of their AGI for charitable purposes. It used to be 50%. So it means that they get a little more upfront now rather than having to carry it over.
And AGI stands for?
Adjusted Gross Income.
Okay.
So it's for most people, that's your total income that's subject to tax. There are a few adjustments, but it is basically your income. So 60% of your income could be given to a charity as long as your collective itemized deductions are over the $12,002 if you're single or $24,004 if you're married. And if you're older, there's additional for potentially age and blindness. So, but in terms of deductions, once you're there, once you're able to itemize, and that's federal, state has a little bit different rule. If they are itemized deductions and your income is high enough, you might get a credit on Wisconsin for those charitable deductions, even though you didn't get enough for itemizing on the federal. So it's important to keep track at any rate.
Good advice.
But there is one other little thing.
Okay. Always
is. Substantiation of the charitable deduction. Several years ago, the IRS put out a procedure that says every charitable deduction you have has to be accounted for. You have to have backup for it. So putting cash in the plate at church on Sunday doesn't count because you have no backup for that. Putting cash in the church envelope where someone keeps a record of it and you have a record is fine, but there needs to be a record. When the donation to the organization gets to be $250 or more, then you must have a written verification from the organization, and it basically says, thank you very much for your gift. By the way, no goods or services were provided, or in the case of goods and service being provided, how much the goods and services were that you received from that donation. And that's subtracted from the donation.
Okay. All right. That's much better than I think a lot of people thought, because I believe a lot of people were just like, I can't deduct it. I'm not going to save. So if they haven't, should start doing that, even like when you donate clothing or goods to a resale shop, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, when you get into higher level of donations, there are some other numbers that you need to be careful of as well. But that could be for another day.
Okay, sounds good. We do have another caller, and Jeff in Superior has a question for you. Hi, Jeff.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Good day. Good day to you. So I have two employers. I've negotiated with one of my employers additional income, which I call quote-unquote income, which I use to contribute to a health savings account. I purchase my own health insurance. Neither one of my employers provides health insurance. So is that taxable income? In other words, there's money given to me by my employer. I'm an employee, and that money I use to purchase my own health, basically health insurance, but it's a health savings account. Is that taxable income? Do I have to declare it as income?
Yes, you have to declare it as income. Anything that you are getting from your employer should appear on your W-2. If your employer has programs such as the HSA, that, and the employer, it's done through the employer, your W-2 would reflect the exclusion of that amount.
Okay.
But from what I understand you're saying, first of all, to have an HSA, you must have high deductible HSA qualified insurance. I'm assuming
that's
that
true.
You are purchasing that yourself.
Yes.
If you are purchasing that yourself, you can take that additional monies that is in your W-2 and contribute it to the HSA and take a deduction on your tax return through the form 8889, and
okay.
That will show up as a reduction on your tax return. So you're getting the reduction just in a different way than your W-2.
Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for the question, Jeff. Appreciate that. And we're just talking about deductions, and one of the things we want to talk about was IRA contributions. Let's get a question, though, from Bill. Apparently, Bill was planning on using the required minimum distribution as a charitable rollover this year. He'll be 70 and a half on July 23rd, but the new law changed to age 72 and a half. Does he have to wait the 2 years to use the rollover, or can he use it this year?
No. He does not have to wait. The 70 and a half rule still applies to the qualified charitable deduction. So the QCD, as we call it, is available for the minimum required distributions. Now let me understand, 70 and a half, if it's for someone who is 70 and a half or older, they're able to take that deduction. Yes.
Okay, he will turn 70 and a half on July 23rd.
I believe that it is still available to him.
Okay.
I do not believe that rule was changed by that.
Okay. And why don't you explain a little bit about what qualified charitable distributions are when in regards to the IRA?
The qualified charitable distribution says that I am able to contribute directly to a charity, 501c3 organization, monies that are coming out of my IRA. It is only available to people who are 70 and a half or older, and prior to the change, those were the people who were subject to RMDs. And we know the RMD required minimum distribution age has changed beginning this year to age 72.
Okay.
But what is important is the money goes out of the IRA and directly to the charity, not to you, and then you give it to the charity. And so tax-wise, the money, instead of being taxable on your tax return, the distribution from the IRA, it is not taxable, but the corresponding IRS, the corresponding charitable deduction is not taken as well. So it kind of slides under the table. There is a 1099 reporting, and it shows up as amount received but not taxable amount. So it is a positive benefit to both the taxpayer and the charity.
Okay. Mary Melm is a tax professional who has been in the tax business for more than 30 years. If you have a question for her, we have open lines, the number 800-642-1234. And you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Now, you also mentioned we might want to talk about qualified business income deductions. and that's QBI. For those in the business. Why don't you talk a little bit about those?
In the 2017 Tax Act, the one that changed our lives tax-wise, Congress created a qualified business income deduction. That business income deduction applies to individuals who operate businesses through sole proprietorships, LLCs not taxed as C corporations, partnerships, and S corporations. It's, in simple terms, it's a 20% deduction against, based on the income. Now, there are a lot of underlying rules that go with it, but the simplified tone is that you have business income with a couple of adjustments, and that times 20% is what a taxpayer might see on their tax return. It was created to give non-C corporation businesses a benefit similar to the reduction of the C corporation tax rate. So if you are trying to do your own tax return and you have a business, I think you need to pay close attention to that to be sure it's done correctly. IRS has really special forms. The first year they came out with, they had worksheets. Now they have a form for the QBI deduction. But it's something that you have to pay close attention to.
Okay.
And again, that was a simplified version because there are more things involved in it.
Sure. Really see a tax professional on something like that, right?
I think that's an excellent
idea.
It
sounds like it. Okay, well, we've got lots of phone calls now. So let's go to Anthony in Neillsville first. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I was wondering, my wife and I recently made a purchase in Arizona to get away from the cold winter. And with the purchase of the mobile home, we pay lot rent. Now, what I was wondering is that lot rent somewhat of a tax deductible? Or can I recoup that back somehow?
Anthony, I am assuming that the getaway in Arizona is not your principal residence and you're staying a resident of Wisconsin. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, it is.
Okay. As such, the lot rent, there is no place to deduct that. If this were a principal residence that you had and it were located in Wisconsin, it would play into the Wisconsin rent property tax credit, but not as your second home.
Okay, well, at least you're enjoying warm weather in the winter, Anthony. next up, we have Kat in Milwaukee. Hi, Kat.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am just wondering how many years of tax returns I need to keep for a deceased person.
Well, that's a really good question. First of all, the general rule for auditing a return, coming back to make sure everything is done, is 3 years for federal and 4 years for the state of Wisconsin. So in that time period, a person who is the personal representative of a deceased person needs to have, at the very least, those available.
And if that person has been deceased longer than those years, do I still have to keep anything?
If they have been deceased more than 4 years, at that point, the IRS or the state of Wisconsin should have come back to question anything. So at that point, I think you would be fairly safe, unless there are some extenuating circumstances, you know, that would question property that maybe went into a trust or an estate is still open or something like that. But under
normal circumstances, there's none of that.
Okay. Under normal circumstances, after the 4 years is up, you should be able to destroy that property.
Thank you very much for that call, Kate. Let's go now to John in Luck. Perfect city for today. Hi, John.
Hi. My neighbor is asking me about his tax return. He's a Wisconsin guy, lived here in the state all year, but he works for a construction company, and they sent him to Iowa. And Iowa withheld some state tax withholding. He only had about $1,500 of Iowa income, and his total money coming in, you know, with that job was, I don't know, a lot of money, $50,000 or $60,000, something like that. Anyway, Iowa withheld money, and so he filed a non-resident return in Iowa, and they took... they did tax him, even though he only had $1,500 of Iowa income. And it seems like he should be exempt from any taxation because of that low amount of out-of-state money. But they did tax him and didn't send him back all his refund. Can you help me out on that, please?
Sure. Your presumption is incorrect in that sense. All states have different filing requirements for out-of-state workers. In Wisconsin, the filing requirement is for $2,000 of income earned in the state of Wisconsin. If you earn more than $2,000 as a non-resident, you're required to file a tax return. All states are different. But the concept that you're missing is, even though $1,500 seems like a small amount, many of the states take a look at the total income, create the tax on the total income, and then do a percentage of that total income. In your example, $1,500 over $50,000, that percent of the tax that they would charge in that state. So that's probably where he's not gotten back what he thinks he should get back.
Okay. All righty. I understand. Thanks for your help. Have a great day.
Thanks, John.
You also.
All right. Let's quickly go to Vernon in Janesville. I think we have time for one more. Hi, Vernon.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Well, what's your question?
My parents passed away about a little year ago, and all the settlements came out as far as money and stuff go. and it was like $92,000 in cash and items. I was wondering what my tax liabilities are on that, if any.
If I understand you correctly, you said you received $92,000 in cash?
It was $50,000 in cash and just odds and stuff from the house.
And $50,000 in cash and incidentals in the house. Is that what you said?
Yes. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
If the $50,000 were sitting in a bank account or something like that, it would be non-taxable. If that $50,000 were sitting in an IRA account and the IRA account was distributed to you and that's where you got the $50,000, some either in a state or you personally would have to pay taxes on the $50,000. So it depends on where it came from. As far as the incidentals in the house, there is no tax consequences to those. Whatever they're worth at the time of death, fair market value date of death, is your basis in those going forward.
That goes for the state of Wisconsin, too?
Goes for the state of Wisconsin as well, yes.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Vernon. We've got Christina. We won't go to her real quick, but she did want to know what the max amount a couple can put in a 2019 HSA.
The 2019 HSA, if it is a family plan, it is $7,000 for the basic coverage with another $1,000 if the person who has the insurance is over 55. The catch-up contribution, and if it's a family plan and they set up two accounts and both are over 55, technically the very max would be $9,000
okay.
for 2019.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mary. We really appreciate it. We've been talking with Mary Mellum. She's a tax professional, has been in the tax business for over 30 years. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Lee Rayburn is our technical director today, and Dean Kinetter is our on-air producer. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. We're going to talk about spiders. Hope you can join us.